NSTA reviewer Jacob Lickenstaff discusses several ways science teachers can use George Clooney's latest flick, The Monuments Men, to connect their courses to other disciplines or tie communications technology through time.
You want to get into the war?
Monuments Men.
Time to put a team together and do our best to protect buildings, bridges, and art before the Nazis destroy everything.
How many men?
Six.
Jesus.
Well, with you at seven.
In armed conflicts around the globe, national, historic, artistic, and architectural treasures generally do not fare very well. The region between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers in Iraq has sometimes been called the cradle of civilization, since it's the site of ancient cities and shows evidence of organized agriculture. Many significant historical artifacts kept in the National Museum of Iraq were removed in 2003, and only a fraction has been returned. Similarly, in Syria, the current civil war damaged many world heritage sites, including Basra, Palmyra, and Aleppo. Collateral damage to buildings and looting of artifacts are two different issues, but both result in the loss of cultural history to the public at large. With the lives of soldiers and civilians on the line, it may seem to be a luxury to worry about the status of items of historical or artistic significance, but a significant effort in this area was undertaken by the Allied forces in World War II. George Clooney's recent film, The Monuments Men, gives a sense of the scope and depth of the issue near the end of that war. Clooney stars as Frank Stokes, an art historian who convinces President Franklin Delano Roosevelt to create a team to find and protect the artwork Nazi Germany looted from European museums and private collections. FDR agrees, and Stokes gathers six other art and architecture experts to create his team of Monuments Men. The cast is impressive. Matt Damon, Bill Murray, John Goodman, and Hugh Bonneville are all on the team. Working with virtually no resources from the Army, the team joins the Allied advance just after the Normandy invasion and begins to work toward the front lines. In Paris, one member of the team meets Claire Simone, played by Kate Blanchett, who kept a catalog of all the art taken by Nazis which passed through her museum during the war. The team discovers hoards of art and gold stashed by the Germans in remote castles and even in salt mines. While the film is true to the actual history, a number of significant liberties were certainly taken. The one I find most notable is that there were actually several hundred people working on the project, not just the seven depicted in the film. They were undersupplied and a very small operation, but not quite so tiny as we see in the movie. The filmmakers also conflate the storage of looted art with a collection of personal items belonging to victims of the Holocaust. Concentration camps did keep items like glasses and wedding bands, but those were not stored alongside the art stolen from private collections. Now, why might science teachers be interested in sharing this film with their students? First, The Monuments Men gives science teachers an opportunity to connect with colleagues in social studies and or art to discuss some of the lesser-known stories of World War II. Second, there are some neat applications of audio and radio technology that are worth pointing out and discussing in a physics or physical science class. Letters from home and from soldiers back to their families were very important to morale on both the front lines and on the home front. A tremendous logistical infrastructure carried mail back and forth through the war zone. In the modern day, folks use Skype or other video calling programs that enable military personnel stationed half a world away to see and hear their families in real time. In the 1940s, though, communication was almost entirely by letter. One bit of mail shown in the film that I was unaware of before seeing Monuments Men was the custom phonograph record. The military provided access to portable phonograph recorders to soldiers, and families could use similar devices back home to record an audio message on an acetate disc. People then would mail the disc, and it could be played on a portable record player. The audio quality sounds pretty terrible by modern standards, but it worked well enough for folks to hear and recognize each other's voices when thousands of miles apart. Another fun piece of old technology we see is a 1940s version of a cell phone. A member of Stokes' team finds some vacuum tubes and manages to repair a portable radio, or walkie-talkie, for the team to use during their mission. What we think of as a modern walkie-talkie bears little resemblance to what the Monuments were carrying around. In 2014, you can buy a radio that fits in the palm of your hand, or even inside a wristwatch, and it'll weigh about 100 grams. And most of that weight is in the battery, and all the electronics are in the form of integrated circuits on computer chips. In 1948, a radio with similar features would be worn as a backpack by one soldier while the operator used the handset. The electronics consisted of vacuum tubes, and the battery was similar in size to a car battery. The whole thing weighed more than 100 times more than our modern-day equivalent, about 17 kilograms. Now, one advantage of that very heavy device, though, is it could be repaired. A burned-out vacuum tube could be replaced, and your radio would be back in business. Very few parts of modern electronics can be repaired, and it's almost never a cost-effective option since the whole device only costs a few dollars. While the Monuments Men takes some liberties with history, it does provide science teachers a chance to discuss the development of audio and radio technologies and to create connections with history and art teachers across campus.
For more of Dr. Blickenstaff's reviews, go to the NSTA website and search for Blick on Flix.
Oh boy.
If you destroy an entire generation of people's culture, it's as if they never existed.